It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
Okay, I'm totally confused as to when and where we are.
Well, this is Thanksgiving Day. You know that?
Oh, that's right. Turkey
is
just around the corner.
For all our faithful listeners for tomorrow. And we're working on Thanksgiving because we didn't get time to do this show. We've been busy. And so now we're doing this podcast for tomorrow.
I thought we were in the grand recording studio in the sky that is timeless. We've stepped out of the realm of time and space, and we're in the land of the eternal.
Wish we could. Not sure I'm that bright to do that, but...
No, it's just a door we fell through.
Actually, for those of you that are tracking these things, this is still October, but we're recording early because I'm gone and we've got lots of garbage going on in our lives and meetings to be at and things to do. So we're putting one in the can, and this will probably air Thanksgiving week, but don't hold us to that. It may not.
What is the can?
The can?
It's just, we're putting one in the can.
Yeah.
What's the can?
That's an expression. Okay. I don't get that expression.
That's a good expression. I get that.
It's the old film cans, and they put it one in the can, so we got one from the road. We're not doing this live, you
put
know?
Put it in the hard drive.
Live. Well, we're not doing it live. We're doing it live.
We're live.
But
this is about life.
But
this
people
is fine.
Hearing
it's a journey.
It We thought it'd be good, though, to cover because we're going to do it on the last podcast we recorded, which may not be the last podcast you heard, but yeah, it's hard keeping this brother on track. Wow.
Yep. Just chase them rabbits.
Throw you under the bus. How about that?
Thank you.
We didn't get to this letter last time, which I thought really kind of underscored some of what we talked about. But George talked about losing the need for fellowship or the need to, you know, that we talked about way back on the in or out of church thing. That fact hasn't aired yet.
We got to do something.
No,
that's not. That's something else.
Yeah, it's the one that it's one that's still going to air 2 weeks from now, which will be 2 weeks past.
I'm lost, dude. Just read the letter.
Anyway, he said, it's taken me many years to learn the difference between love and need deprivation. What I want and what I need is indeed totally centered. I spent years looking for something or someone to fill my need. I read in 1 Corinthians that love does not seek its own or what is best for itself, but what is best for the beloved. It's hard for me to admit that love is not fixated on itself, its own needs, my own desires, but that is what is best for the beloved.
See, but of our definitions of knowing loved are defined from that place.
Yeah.
They're kind of wrong.
And part of what you're talking about, when you're that desperate for, like, a connection or fellowship...
Everyone else feels that. Well, run away!
You're kind of like that. Yeah, you're kind of like that single person in the bar looking for a mate. And it's like,
run
away! It's way too desperate. Yeah, head for the door, Louise!
Run away!
Yeah, and I think the piece of... I think people find the relationships they want faster when they don't need them than when they... need them.
Yeah, the whole thing about community and fellowship and all that other stuff, you know what? If it doesn't first really get found in him, then gosh, when it tries to happen between people, it gets weird. I try to get from you what I really can only get from God.
Yeah.
I think when I get my needs met from God, then I have something more to share. Then there's life between people.
And you know what?
But if I'm trying to suck it out of you, you're going to tend to feel that, and I tend to drain you.
You know what the best indicator of that in my life has been?
No.
When I was trying to get what I need from other people, I'm always frustrated that other people aren't giving me what I want. And so the relationships are frustrating.
Yeah, you don't
like
them.
And always hurt, and people aren't doing enough and all that. When you live inside God touching your needs, then when you find...
Everyone else's overflow.
Then it's thankfulness. It's like, wow, I had a great conversation. I love what they shared. Because I'm not looking, well, it didn't do this. There was no this for it to do. It was just, it was what it was. And I come away, I mean, that's just true about everything in my relationship with God now. Thanksgiving for me.
Thanksgiving! Hey, turkey day! Here we go!
Thanksgiving for me used to be a discipline. I wasn't thankful, so I had to act thankful. And it was true.
Well, you put your religious suit on.
Well, it was like, well, God wants, you know, sacrifice to praise, and so you have to sacrifice to give God praise because he's not doing it in my life.
Yeah, that's what he wanted. He wanted that. Lord, I praise you.
Well, if you're not thankful, and God's a guy that needs thanks to be whole, then you got to keep pumping them up with the fake stuff. No, I'm serious. I'm overstating it for sure.
Yeah, oh, just.
But I'm serious. Thanksgiving for me used to be 20 years ago. Okay, God, I'm thankful.
It's a workout.
For these people in my life, even though they're creepy and they don't come to church often enough to make me look successful, I'm thankful that you've given me these sheep. And I'm thankful that you've given me this person to be my life. Even though they lie about me and lie to me, I'm grateful.
I thank you for the way they're shaping my soul.
Yes! You know what I find now in all...
What a crock!
In God, in relationships now, when you're not living with yourself at the center... You're thankful for what comes out of the torrential crud of life that's good and full of... I lay down my head every night in my life now somewhere on this planet. I just... God, you're amazing. Thanks for today. Thanks for that moment. And that, because I didn't have expectations to spoil them, I can now see what God was giving me in them that enriched my life today. And I find myself a much more thankful person than I ever used to be. I used to be a frustrated person.
You know that whole expectations thing? We've talked a bunch about this at different times.
We have. And we're not going to get to these letters.
No, we will. We will. But I think that only really gets displaced. I think it's really frustrating for people who are being told, you just got to punt those expectations, but keep an expectancy. I think people are like, whatever. I can't do that. That is so stupid.
I can't.
What wordplay?
I disagree.
No, here's my
respectfully.
Point. Here's my point.
With all due respect.
Here's my point. I don't think until God displaces you from the center of your own universe, we're really able to do that very well. But once he does, it isn't about me. And therefore, I don't have to have approach every situation as if, well, what do I want from it? See, when I'm the center of all of the gravity, I'm sucking it all in, I do have to control it, and it's hard to not.
This was my point. Exactly.
See, that's why I said, wait for it.
That's exactly what I said earlier.
Well, I reiterated it.
You know what I've learned of late?
What have you learned, Wayne?
The expression "with all due respect" means?
Has none.
You're really an idiot, but I can't say it here. With all due respect.
I am holding back myself.
You're a moron and I hate you, but I'm
you.
Supposed
well,
to be
nice.
Well,
you said it to me four times. I appreciate that.
It's hilarious.
But I don't expect you to be different.
I wouldn't expect me to either, with all due respect.
Yes, of course.
Just like whatever. You know, whatever.
Yeah, the holy whatever. See, I gave you one of those a few podcasts ago.
You know what I broke my daughter of that whatever stuff?
What? You broke your daughter?
Yeah, when she was going to whatever.
She was a horse?
Well, at that age, she liked horses. Julie, this is when you were very young. She'll remember this. She used to say, whatever, and then that snotty little, you know, pre-adolescent way of saying whatever. And I'd say, oh, go to hell. And she'd go, what? She said, basically, whatever is the substitute for go to hell. And she goes, no. And so every time she said whatever, I'd say, okay, I'll go to hell. And she finally stopped saying whatever. I still use that on
Twitter. Yes, it's a little mind-bending there.
Well, because whatever really is a dismissive. It's an unclothed with all due respect.
Okay.
And you know what else I've learned?
Yeah.
You know what?
I had your modification tool. Was that loving her?
You know what I don't recall, mate?
Yes.
Okay.
Don't go there. Don't go there.
I know what it means.
Yes, I know too. God.
I know what it means.
Don't go there.
Okay. Let's read what Michelle.
Next letter.
Let's read what Michelle says. Michelle said, I've been trying to find this place you describe week after week. I left the quote-unquote church, use air quotes, I appreciate that, about 3 or 4 years ago after 49 years, and now I'm just as alone now as I was then. I can't find Father God. I keep trying, and as distasteful as you find that Brad...
I didn't do anything.
I read that wrong. I read that wrong.
Thanksgiving, with all due respect, I am not a part of this.
I keep trying. And as distasteful as you find that, Brad, I'm not going to give up.
It's a lot. I should have the right to read this letter.
I wasn't going to read that part. So let's pretend I didn't read that.
Okay.
I don't have the people. I think people misunderstood a lot of that podcast.
You think?
Yeah.
With all due respect, I'm pretty sure they did.
I don't have the people around that want to hear from me. I don't get to feel the acceptance of adoring groups asking me to come share with them.
Assuming we do.
Who wants that anyway? Who wants that anyway?
I don't have that. Crowd.
There is nothing that will screw you up more than
an
adoring group of people.
That's the love of God refraining from allowing that.
But she said, I get nothing. Nothing from God, nothing from people. Now, I hope some of the recent podcasts we've tried to address, where do you find the trailhead? Go back to that one if you missed it, because I think that my heart hurts with people who say, I've been on this journey 3 or 4 years and I'm alone as alone can be. God's not here. Other people aren't here. I hear the cry of your heart. I can also say with absolute surety,
that's not true.
God doesn't want you there. The feeling is true.
The feeling is real and has to be dealt with.
But I would say, if I'm 3 or 4 years in this process and nothing is changing, here's what I want to say. I think you got to stop a minute and go, okay, what can I do differently? What am I, and I don't mean performance stuff. I just mean, God, if I've just stopped going to religion and now I'm sitting at home staring at the walls, I don't know what she's doing. It could be more of a performance thing, because I think you can get out of religion and not have religion out of you. Could be that. It could be some disappointments. I think you need an older sister to sit down and I want to talk this out. I want to talk this out with somebody to find out why after 3 to 4 years I still feel stuck, because I would say that's not normal.
Well, let me toss in one possible thought to this, beyond the fact that I'm not frustrated with people in those situations.
As distasteful as you might be.
Yeah, I find it so distasteful.
I hope she said that with a smile. Let's give a little smile.
I hope so, yeah, smiley face.
A little wink.
Yeah. I think one of the things that's difficult for people when they are feeling this is there still can be, and Michelle, you may not be here, but I know others have been, is there still that performance rut? I'm still operating on some programmed thoughts that if I just do the right things, then this will happen. And I think sometimes God pulls back going, I'm not reinforcing that. I'm not going to let you perform for me, and therefore here's a dog treat, and I'm going to reinforce an incorrect. I think there is coming to that place of a broken end of myself. Jesus said, blessed are the poor in spirit. Well, I don't know anyone that wants to be. So I don't understand they're blessed. I'm just going like, most of us want to run from that sense of bankruptcy. And I have watched this play out in a lot of different lives. God will allow us to come to that broken end of our own self-reliance, our own sense of stuff, our own center of our own world. And that sometimes takes a process of things coming to a painful end. And that's not fun, and I don't think God's like, well, I'm just going to let you suffer. I just think there is a coming to an end of that in a broken place there, that's different than that sense of, well, I've done it and it's not working. Those are two different places of the heart.
And that's where Christian friends serve us least well.
I'm sure.
No, I'm serious. I had this discussion with someone this week. Arriving at the end of ourselves and all we think we can do to make God work in us, or even though she said, I can't find God, part of me is going, good, stop. Stop trying to find him, because he'll find you. This is really about him connecting with you more than it's about you finding him. Seeking him isn't I'm doing things to find him. It's just the openness of heart saying, make yourself known to me. But what I notice is when people are getting to the end of themselves, every voice in their life is saying, go the other way. Go back to there. You're really wonderful. We love you. You're a great person. We keep people from getting to the end of the road.
Yes.
And the journey really, I mean, I can tell you the most painful crash in my life began this journey. It really began to be able to step back and go, okay, so what I've been doing for 40 years isn't really, it wasn't that God wasn't revealing himself to me. It wasn't that he was making himself known. But as he would make himself known to me, I would get all religious about it. And I don't think God withdraws in that time, like, okay, I'm not going to reward that. I think he's just not there. You go looking all that religious angst, and he goes, I'm right over here making myself known to you, and you're going that way. Toward the end of yourself is where God hangs out. It's where he's got his pup tent. And when you're going down the trail of, as the true-faced guys say, the trail of good intentions, are you going down the trail of religious performance? You're going down, you say, I can't find God. No, he doesn't live down those trails. He lives at the end of yourself, at the end of all you think you can do to perform, all that you're trying to do to earn his life in you, all you're trying to do to make your life more meaningful and make it more whatever. He's at the end of my giving up my attempts to accomplish what only God accomplishes.
And, you know, you can comment on whether... Well, I'm wanting to be careful and kind to people's emotions because I know these things are painful.
I'm going to put my filter on for people.
I think...
With all due respect.
Thank you. I bless your turkey.
You know what I can't, recall?
Yes,
I'm sorry. Go back to your point.
I think... Part of that being able to find the sort of the moment of awakening in that end of self is coming to a place of acceptance of that being okay. I think there's people that are near that place. There's some are so angry at God. And I want to say, that's okay too. But at some point, that too needs to be kind of laid down. It's like what's in your hands in that moment it somehow needs to be exchanged a little bit. Some people are so just ashamed of themselves. They're consumed with the I didn't do it. I can't do it. And I'm not okay with that because I should be able to. And it's like that too has to be laid down. And I think it's like when you come to that I'm at the end of myself, it's that sense that I haven't given up as in quit. I've sat down as in there's nothing of my fleshly efforts that's going to achieve anything here, and I'm okay with that. That's a profound place. That's a great place to come to.
It is. Somehow, when you really care about people on this journey, you're going to cheer them on getting to the end of themselves. You're not going to try and, oh, please, you're a better person than this, and call them back from that brink. You're actually going to stand by their own and say, as painful
keep
as
going,
this
dude.
Is, you're getting closer to reality than
yeah.
you know. And everyone else is pumping them up the wrong way. Everyone else has got, you know, the approval of the crowd, the adoring, whatever. It's just, that's not where it happens.
No.
It happens. There really is... Everything, and I think this is what takes an honest heart. I think people end up on this journey because something in them, even when they were doing their best religious attributes, and I know we get accused of, well, you guys left all the religion because you got hurt and you're bitter. Not true.
No.
It's just that as hard as I worked it, and I worked it well, it never produced the fruit I understood that it was supposed to produce.
Yeah.
So the reality of people on this journey is just saying, it's not that that was bad. It's that in the middle of it, I went, there's got to be something more. This isn't enough. And that's what got me to the end of myself, because everything I tried, I would be honest enough to say, yep, worked it hard, worked it well. And maybe that's why it was easier for me to get there, because it wasn't like I couldn't work it well. I could work it well.
No, you came to the end of the curtain.
But yeah, you come to all your hard work doing whatever. Yeah, and that's what I've always...
It's not behind there.
And that's what I always said about my university degree in biblical studies. I finally knew what everyone else didn't know. See, I thought people knew more. I got to the end of all my studies going, okay, so it really isn't... It really isn't these people know more. It's they have a degree, so they pretend to know more. It's the honesty of life that takes you to the end of yourself. No, I can't change that. For all my hard work and that show I told you about a couple of weeks ago with the intervention thing, the real problem in the intervention wasn't the drug-addicted daughter. It was the enabling mother who needed a daughter to rescue. And in the middle of the intervention, he says, are you going to therapy? What do you mean, am I going to therapy? I don't need therapy. He said, oh, you need therapy worse than anybody else here. And she goes, what do you mean? I'm just trying to help. No, you're addicted to helping your daughter. And that's causing your daughter to be addicted. And she couldn't get it. She couldn't go. She wouldn't do anything to change her deal. And I think that's the risk of coming to the end of yourself, is you've got to realize my best efforts, my best motives, my best doing all I can for God is in the way of your relationship with him. He can't get there from
here. See, I think that's the stuff that Paul was talking about in, you know, when he talks about being the Pharisee of Pharisees. He actually lists all this accolades that we would just sort of like, well, that's pretty commendable, Paul. And he says, well, I count it all, but, you know, and the actual word is dung.
Rubbish, yeah, we got it.
Yeah, we clean that up. You know, we got to help God out. The reality is he saw it for what it was, and sadly, so many of us have a hard time acknowledging that self-effort and the life of God are pretty far apart.
Yeah, the real problem with religion is you're calling poop chocolate. Is that what you're saying?
I did not see that coming.
No, that's what it really is. You've got poo here, and you're going, this is chocolate. And people are eating it going, dang, I thought chocolate would taste better than this. Oh, well, you can't say that, because you're just being rebellious. You're just being a fool.
No,
you're going, no, I'm not.
You did.
I'm telling you. That's what it is. And it's the people who kept saying, you know what? I got to tell you, it tastes more like poo. I think that's great.
Wow.
That's great.
Wow.
And Paul could just say, oh, it was poo.
Yeah.
And then when the Galatians start eating poo again, it's all your chocolate. He goes, oh, hold a minute. Yeah. No, not chocolate. Poo.
Not chocolate.
But as long as you're convinced, it just needs
that
to.
That is a chapter heading, not
what?
Chocolate.
No, we can't do that. We can't do this. We don't want to draw attention to this part of the podcast.
But this is great.
It is great because
the title right there is not chocolate.
Because one of the best things about going to Europe, which I'm going to be doing shortly, is they have
chocolate.
The best chocolate in the world. But we sit there with our little poo and we keep stirring it around going, you know, if we just add something here. We just add a little more sugar, a little more butter, this is going to be better chocolate.
It's never chocolate.
That's what
chocolate only comes from heaven above.
One of my favorite verses from the Message, the translation Eugene Peterson did, and it takes the Beatitude, the first one, you are blessed when you're at the end of your rope. And we don't really believe that. When somebody's eating poo and they finally realize it, and we're going, oh gosh, no, please don't think of it that way. Instead of going, you know what, you're really blessed when you're with less of you, there's more of God in the rule.
Absolutely.
That's just a great way to say it.
I mean, the whole bit of, you know, poor in spirit, you look at Jesus' little Sermon on the Mount, first three, four things he says, it's like, oh, give me a break. That's good news?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, yes, really.
Yeah.
If seen from an eternal perspective, from the eternal one, coming to that place where self-effort dies is the defining moment where all of a sudden I start to go, oh, his life is different than my working.
Yep.
I see. I think most of us, and I mean, God's voice is like this.
Nice segue.
You know, it is.
I know.
It's like,
I'm hearing you.
I think until I have that defining moment where it's like, it's not just me and my religious self-talk.
Yep.
But there's something that pierces through, that has more wisdom, has life, has that insight. That moment becomes a point of profound definition of going, oh, I now have a perspective I didn't have before. Until I come to the end of my religious self-effort, I don't know when it's the life of God.
No, and I think it's where it's very difficult to hear him. When I'm still at the center of my universe. And that voice just gets drowned out in all the other noise going on around my life. The second beatitude is, you're blessed when you've lost everything that is most dear to you. See, most people won't believe that in a minute. What? I'm not blessed? What do you mean most dear to me?
Yeah, that's proof God doesn't love me.
Only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you.
See, that changes everything.
The very thing we think are enemies to God making himself known in us, being at the end of our rope, losing what's most dear to us, losing our dependency on the wrong things is the very thing that opens us to the trailhead
yes.
of here's where God is. Here's where he makes himself known. And most people, we don't want them. We don't become cheerleaders for you are blessed when you get there. We're going, no, don't go there. That's where depression.
Danger, danger.
Yeah. Run from that. Eat more poo. It helps your chocolate. I don't think more poo helps. But going back to the voice of the Lord, because come back to me now. That's not that funny.
It is to me, and I'm just surprised. But like, I didn't think that coming from Wayne.
That's a pleasant. Great analogy, though. Well, we got things.
It's not chocolate.
We got grandkids around here. You deal with poo.
I do get that. Yeah, okay. I get that.
Anyway, this came from the abashed tree muncher.
What?
I don't know. It was on our blog. That's the.
It's the president of the Six.
That's the
club
arbiter.
Or not?
That's the arbiter they've chosen. Avatar. What is it? Avatar. I don't know. Thanks for sharing your input at the end of the podcast, asking how we know it's God's voice. Help pin a false reality down I've lived with. It's hindered my end of the relationship with Jesus. I recognize that all the way back to when I was a child, I would play the voice of God inside my head. I would make up the rules of what God thought and would say to me, and I tried to be my own God. It gave me a false sense of security and control. Frankly, I like the power I fooled myself into thinking I had. Isn't that true?
Wow.
I like poo.
At least he acknowledges it.
And I loved analyzing with my own mind. This way I could be in control of my value and worth. Plus, I could cut out what the scary world said. Not until 5 minutes ago did I realize this existed. No wonder my brain hurts so much. I now recognize it for the evil it is. It is gorging yourself on the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, telling oneself that they know more than God, that they are actually God's voice. I thank God that I'm learning his reality because mine can be pretty miserable.
Mm.
Finding chocolate.
Mm.
That's all good.
Mm.
I wonder when I read this, though, about playing God in my own head, I got to wondering... You know, kids end up with these imaginary friends when you're a kid. Kids make up these friends, and they have these conversations with these friends. I know a lot of it is make-believe. I know it can be construed as evil like this, where I become the voice of God in my own head. I wonder how often it is kids simply hearing a greater voice than themselves at a young age, and instead of being so dismissive of it so quickly, find out, is this God? Is this someone playing God? But I think kids are more naturally inclined to believe a voice.
I got to tell you.
We adults are.
Each one of my kids, because frankly, I've sat there going like, let's not wait till they're in their later teens and 20s. It's like, let's start when they're little. We've been about trying to discern what's going on in that hearing realm.
Yep.
Sometimes it is your own voice. And... you know, when Jared was trying so hard, I could tell he's trying to do something right and he's wanting to call it God because he's got a value of hearing God and doing what God says. So I want to make, you know, I'm going to set it on a tee and do it for myself.
Yep.
And you just go like, dude, I need to just sort of let you in on a little secret. There's a religious impulse in us that kind of wants to sort of set up that scenario. You gotta be careful of that. How do I discern? How do I test that? And each one of my kids, like Jonathan, sadly, would get plagued with just a bunch of condemning voices. And honestly, it made him a quieter kid who was more stuck in his brain. And he would tell me, here's what these voices, he knew it wasn't him.
Hmm.
And it took us a couple of years to silence those things, and I'm just going like, my kid is getting assaulted from the enemy, and it is diminishing his potential. He is feeling under it, and he's learned, and it's neat that he's a little older, a little more mature, and a little more aware, and he's now able to kind of confront those, and he's able to also know when he gets some of these dreams or the impulses from God, he knows when they're the God ones. And just going, he hadn't gone through some big class on hearing God's voice. We had just made it a part of a dialogue, and we have acknowledged this is part of the life of learning to discern.
See what's tragic? And here's what I wonder, if the kids who end up getting tied into religion more deeply, as I did, because if, was it Jonathan or Jared you were talking about just now?
Jonathan.
If Jonathan had been in a religious context, he would have begun to identify those condemning voices as God's voice.
Yes.
That's what he would have
yes.
learned. The poo is chocolate.
Yes.
And that's what that's what's sad, because I do think people get really wired deeply in religion and are the condemning voices to other people, that they've been really convinced that the condemning voices in their head, the angry,
yes,
is God's, instead of, no, it's not. And I mean, there's three origins, maybe four, of thoughts that wrangle around in my head. I mean, there's Wayne's thoughts, just right. What Wayne thinks. There's God's thoughts. There's the enemy's thoughts.
And there's others.
Oh, there's other people. Yeah, tell you stuff. And the Hebrews talks about having our senses trained to discern good and evil, which is doing exactly what you said with Jonathan. It's doing it in life.
Yeah.
This is, I can see that now. This isn't.
Well, I read that verse. It's Hebrews, I think, 5:14, where it talks about through practice, we have trained our senses to discern the difference between good and evil. Well, I read that and I went, well, when was practice? You know, I've been an athlete most of my growing up. It's like, well, I know what practice is. Yep. I don't know what we do in practice.
Practice doesn't count.
When was that practice?
Yeah, no, nobody
let me. And I'm going, like, I've never had that practice.
No. It's time to take it.
Whispered to my heart was the idea, every single decision you make, Brad. And I began to be very intentional about, all right, that impulse of don't drive home that way this time. Take the other street. Well, why? You know what? As opposed to getting stuck at that cross section, I'm just going to listen to that impulse and let's see. Well, nothing happened. Well, neither did I have an accident. There's times that I have ignored that voice and ended up in one. And I didn't like the fruit of that, but it did train me to go, you know, I had that impulse to not do this. I wished I had listened to that, because I wouldn't have found myself in this situation. Might have been in another one, but I wouldn't have been in this one, and I knew I ignored that.
Yeah.
And it's in those moments where you're just going, like, let life and the everyday things of it be the educator. It's like playing baseball. This is simply a time at bat. You're not going to get it all right. See, I think most people are terrified of getting it wrong.
Yeah.
So they never swing.
Also, they don't maybe like the thing God whispers in their heart. Like, you walk in by the kitchen and notice the dishes haven't been done. You get this little nudge about, why don't you do the dishes for God? And you're like going, no, well, that can't be God.
That's Sarah's job. Right there. I knew it wasn't me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we took out one option. It wasn't the voice of others, because there were no one around.
Probably not the devil. I'm going to bless my wife.
Probably not. So the decision-making process, if you went through it, is actually not that. It's not rocket science.
Yeah.
And it's not as if it's not subjective either. It's like, I think people are going, well, I want to just know that I know. It's like, well, I don't know how you know that you know that you know until you've been at bat 1,000 times.
Yeah.
To have a sense of, you know what, the more familiar I am with thinking this through and doing it with a sense of humility, knowing the subjective nature, the less tense I am about it, and the more I've had a chance to look at fruit and have that sense of, you know what, I think this might be him.
Yeah, and if you feel like God's telling you to punch your friend in the face, that might not be him.
Yeah, there's some Bible verses that might just help you on the front end of that kind of moment, that just like,
interestingly enough, the worst thing Christians have ever done to me, they've done saying to me, God told me to do this to you. Yeah. And it wasn't necessarily a punch in the face. It might be to lie to you. It might be to treat you in a hospital. It might be not even to fulfill their own promise. But I think that's the other side of it that really ruins this for people. A lot of people who claim to hear the voice of the Lord are doing what the abashed tree muncher talked about. I've become the God of my own voice.
Right.
And so now I can tell other people, God told me to do this to you. Even when it's...
Yeah, not chocolate, buddy.
That's not... Yeah. I'm thinking this is poo.
I'm thinking he ate the wrong stuff.
Smells like, tastes like, yeah.
I think it is.
Kyle said this, if I had to guess and think the touchy-feely accusations may come from listeners not being able to relate to the way Wayne mostly describes living in God's love. I think he's talking about, you know, the touchy-feely God. I think to the uninitiated, it can sound like a string of vague adjectives. This isn't a criticism. I think it's just really hard to make plain to others and experience it so personal. Experience, in fact, that God has tailor-made for your particular life. I think Brad might have articulated some of the questions people have. I sure would love to hear some of the answers to them, Wayne, when you attempted to lay out what it was like to hear from God. I was eating it up. If you're willing, keep trying to make those kinds of experiences plain. I find that thing really helpful. So that was right at the end of that podcast where I'm going, gee, dude, don't do this to me now. But people really resonated with that, going, hey, the kind of discussion we're having right now, help me learn to listen because I want to.
I don't think you learn this on your own. I was incredibly helped by people that would validate. I mean, as I was awakening to the fact that God just might speak beyond the pages of memorized Bible verses,
mm-hmm.
and I love the fact that he does speak through his word. But the idea that he speaks perhaps outside of that in a devotional, conversational, personal way.
That he would put thoughts in our head.
I was actually, can't trust that. That's the devil. He's going to deceive you. And I'm just like, I sort of brought up with that as a subtle, unspoken, because I don't remember someone actually saying that, but I do remember going, I don't know.
You know what is strange? Most people who believe God doesn't speak today believe the enemy does.
Yeah, like he's more powerful.
The thoughts in your head are always the devil, because God wouldn't talk to us. Why would the devil be the only one that gets to talk to us?
That's very, very nice point. That's poo.
But I think about... No, that was chocolate. I think a little kid growing up learning to listen to the voice of parents or whatever is a great example of this. Because when you're a little baby, what do you got? You got... You know, everybody, you got a bunch of people in the room talking. You've got, you know, the TV on or the stereo's going. You got all these voices going by, and they don't have a clue who's who. But over time, they begin to go, okay, that's mommy. That face that comes in front of me and talks that way, that's mommy. And they begin to zero in on mommy and on daddy and on grandma and grandpa. They learn. They have those senses trained over time. And I think that's true for us. There's a whole lot of voices that come at us. And I think the voices we hang around, if you hang around religious people that are condemning and judgmental and manipulative and pressured, you're going to identify the wrong voice as the God voice.
Yeah.
And when you hang around people who learn to live loved, who know what it's like, who know that sometimes the things God says are in the exact opposite of your self-interest, then you want to hang out with those people going, oh, so that could be him. Yeah, could be. Why don't we try it and see? This is not an exact science. This is something we grow to learn and grow to appreciate. There are lots of thoughts in our head. Which ones are God's? Which ones are Wayne's?
Oh, the noise and the traffic in the human brain is outrageous. And one of the biggest challenges is to try to quiet your soul so that I can start to go, okay, as opposed to being overwhelmed at all the noise, just take it one at a time. What is it that you think you're being given the impulse to do? I don't know how to deal with all the cacophony, but I can take it one at a time and just go, does this thought conform itself to the image of Jesus Christ? Does this seem like something Jesus might say?
Yeah.
And if it does, well, then what do I think I need to do about it?
And if I don't know that, reading the Gospels would be a great way to go, but I imagine Jesus punching Peter in the face. probably not. But I imagine Peter or Jesus betraying a promise he made. I don't think so. That helps a ton right there. And then as you get to know Jesus more inside this loving presence in your life, then you really, I mean, a lot of our impulses are merely self-protective, self-indulgent impulses.
You know,
they just are.
A couple months ago, I think somewhere on the forum, a bunch of people were having a little hubbub about the reading the Bible. And some of, I can't read it. It's just, I mean, and all they heard was the
religious.
And it's like, you know what? Okay, if that's all you can hear, great. Take a little break because you need to be able to hear it with a different lens, different
voice. Yeah, that's a mixed metaphor
okay?
There. There you go.
Yeah. And
but different iPod.
The real reason that I cherish the scriptures and want to stay in them is it's like a tuning fork. It helps me know here is the record of what God has said that has been trusted and validated by the community of faith down through history. We're saying, you know what? This stuff, whatever you think of the canon and everything else, what you do have is an affirmation of the people of God over history. That's God's voice. And to be familiar with that helps me to go, okay, I have some awareness of how he speaks and what he says. And then when you get impulses, you go like, that doesn't sound like him. Nuh-uh. I don't think so. But I have a frame of reference for it to give me some. I think it's really challenging to try to, well, I'm just going to hear God's voice, but I have no frame of reference for what he said. I think that is like running out and playing in traffic. It's like, you know what? If you don't have some context to know, if there's not a community of people around you to be able to say, hey, what do you think?
Yeah, and if there's not a basic sense of integrity in you that helps you determine his voice versus not his voice, I think it comes from Scripture, like you're saying. I think it comes from, like, I was talking with a guy at lunch yesterday, and he says, you know, the truth is very simple. And I said, you know, it is. If you're just going to tell the truth, that's simple. If you're going to start lying and
fudging
on things and God giving you permission to lie because this lie is going to be good for someone else, if there's not a basic integrity of your life as an individual so that God is just my carte blanche excuse to do whatever I want to do, you're never going to learn to hear from this God. And this God's just going to – your view of God is just going to make you a more selfish, creepy person.
Yeah, and I do think there's other voices that are happy to talk to you.
Absolutely. And that's why Paul was saying, let your yes be yes and your no be – that's a pretty simple way to live. You don't have to hear from God to let your yes be a yes, to, you know, to have the basic integrity that says, look, I told you I'd do that. Now I'm going to do it. No, it's not easy now. No, I wish I had said I wouldn't. But you know what? It's easy for me to live inside a basic integrity as God's voice being known, than to think I have a license now with God's voice to do whatever it is that I want, to hurt people around me and to grab for my own whatever. And there's so many people that do that.
And I think that becomes a real hindrance for other people to go like, because it has been used as the excuse for the abuse, people are like, well, I don't know. It's too flippant. I don't often say God said this because I have a frame of reference to know that there's things that I can clearly define for me. I heard that. But if I just thought this, I don't establish it as the same thing. I go like, you know what? It occurred to me.
Yeah.
I'm going to take responsibility for the lack of clarity there. And when it is a little more clear, I don't mind saying, you know what? This one feels a little different. In my experience of life, last 20 years, I've learned to be a little more comfortable with the nuanced realm of all of that. There's times I get dreams. It's just like, that makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then there's times that, man, is there an insightful time where I wake up just like, no way. That was one of those dreams where that really gives me life and clarity and understanding in something that I've needed. And I'm just like, thank you, God.
And I'll say it this way. I don't know of anyone who really hears God, lives alongside and walks with him that ever says, God told me to do this. They don't use that language. It's I sense God leading me this way. I really have a strong impulse that God might be. People who say, God told me to do this, what usually follows that is some kind of selfish ambition to get out of their heart.
Yeah, I've lived with communities where I would agree with the tenor of what you just said, but I also have whole camps of friends that sort of language of validation, of communicating, God told me, I think they sincerely use that. Not just for their selfish ends, but they've sort of been given that as, you know, it's that commonplace. So, unfortunately, there are people that will use that. And I even have to sort of discern. Not everyone that says that is necessarily just justifying stuff, but I wish people would be a little more humble in their use of that.
No, what I said was not there aren't people who can sincerely use it. I'm just saying of the people I know who are really on a journey of living love, they don't talk about God that way. They don't.
Yeah, because I think when you do sometimes, it's sort of like, you know what, most of the people I know as mature believers, they kind of take responsibility for the things they're saying.
Yeah, and they recognize, I think, with Paul, that we're, at best, we're seeing through a darkened glass. So I can say, yeah, I think this is God, but I don't know until the outworking of it. And then we'll find
out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I concur.
Well, have a happy Thanksgiving, except you've already had it. So
nice turkey. Way to go. And
you know what?
Chocolate.
I'm hungry.
Eat.
I'm going to go get some chocolate
right now. Get some real chocolate.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.